Gentlemen, Jody, I see you on there, man. Welcome. Make sure we're recording so I don't get in trouble. What's up, brother? All right, gents. So the topic of mindset comes up often, and obviously you could approach, call it a success mindset from a lot of different angles, but the first and most important angle, I think, the more I study and objectify what we'll call success and progress, it seems to boil down to living objectively rather than subjectively. And what that means in my mind is you simply have to set goals. And sometimes people set goals that are outside of alignment with their values. And if you set goals that are out of alignment with what you value, you're going to fall short. So the key is learning to set goals that either are currently in alignment with your values or how you can link them to your values. And then ultimately start creating the most, sorry, somebody's not this, the most reasonable daily habit that you're able to follow through with 100% or follow through on with 100% accuracy. So we call that functional capacity, right? Everyone's got a different functional capacity, meaning some people can take on a lot, some people cannot take on a lot, depending on your life, your experience. And so that's how we really approach our coaching as well, right? So we'll set a 12-month target with all of our clients. We'll say, here's what we're going to look like in 12 months, or sometimes it's 5 years. And then we simply look at what's the time domain that we want to work on. Because some people, we can just give them a month of habits, and they're going to follow through. Some people, if you give them a day, it's a lot. Like, hey, I'm just going to help you get through today. Right. So if you guys have a goal where you're trying to change something, as an example, if you're trying to get off alcohol, well, then your goal isn't, I want to not do this for a month or 3 months. The goal is, I want to do this for one day. So your functional capacity is very low, but we're just trying to win the day. But eventually you'd be like, oh, like if I said, hey, stop eating chocolate bars, you're like, oh, I can do that for a year. Right. And so it depends on the scope of the habit change or of the behavior change, and ultimately on your ability to take on this new habit or this new intervention. So one of the things that most people do wrong, or many people do wrong, is when they set goals, they're not linking them to their values. And as soon as you do that, the likelihood of you falling through is going to be less, because when it starts to get hard, you're like, eh, I don't really value this anyways, at an unconscious level. So it's really important that you start to become consciously aware of, what do I value? And am I living in that value system, which many of us are. Some of us think of it, what we value is different than what we actually do. We could talk about that too. And then trying to find ways to link your biggest goals to your values. For example, I value my family above all. Therefore, it's very easy for me to link health to family, right? Hey, if I'm healthy, it makes me a better dad. If I'm healthy, it allows me to live longer with my kids. So it's really easy to link those things. Whereas one thing that's a little more tricky to link, still possible, a little more tricky, is finances. Because finances, you go, well, if I'm more financially well off, I can be a better dad. Well, but it also takes away from my ability to be a dad, right? Because sometimes those things are at odds. So you always have to navigate, am I linking my highest value to my goals? And just finding the ways that the goals that you're setting are directly going to positively contribute to your value system. And then just live into it. And I think the challenge with success for people who quote unquote fall short of success mindset is you set goals that are inappropriate, or you're not capable of following through on. And then you start to lose belief in yourself. You start to believe like, oh man, I'm not going to do it anyways. I won't set goals. And so that's where it comes down to, like, what's the smallest incremental unit of time that I, or maybe the largest incremental unit of time ultimately, that I'm actually able to withstand and hold my responsibility for 100% of the time. And the more I look at mindset, the more it just seems to come down to that. Now, there's a lot of stuff we could dance with when it comes to mindset. Here's a huge one. Dr. John DeMartini is just an incredible gift when it comes to mindset. And his the premise of it, his entire model is people tend to inflate things that and put things on a pedestal, and they tend to idolize things without seeing the negative. And he said the way you create the most successful mind or the most successful life is by training yourself to always see the inherent polarity in everything we do. So everything has positives and negatives, benefits and drawbacks, black and white, up and down, hot and cold. Everything has equal and opposite benefits and drawbacks. So if you create this fantasy around your love, you're like, I'm so in love and infatuated with this person, there will always be a balancing out around it. So everything in your life, whether negative or positive, has both charges always attached to it. And the more you can train yourself to see that from the beginning, the more you prevent yourself from having these fantasies in your mind that ultimately get you broken down and disappointed. And that's really the premise of one of the main premises of his teachings that have just been so unbelievably helpful for me. It's not easy, but once you start understanding, you see it. If you're ever experiencing disappointment, let down, pain around people or circumstances, your expectation has been such that I've inflated this thing, or I've become infatuated with this thing without seeing its negatives, without seeing its potential downsides. But sometimes we become prideful and like, I'm so great, rather than seeing the opposite. And like, well, you've also got these other things. It happens with relationships where maybe you see something negative in someone. Think of someone right now, you see something negative in them, and you're like, I hate when they do that. It really drives me nuts when they do that. And his argument would be, and most people's argument would be, the reason you even see it in them is because you also have it in yourself. So learning to see what you have also, and then what's the positive and what's the negative of that thing. So this is kind of getting a little off. Yeah, it does sound like Stoicism, doesn't it? I'm actually going to start reading Marcus Aurelius again. I've got it in my bag. It's been a few years since I read Meditations, but let me get back into that. So mindset guys can go in a lot of different directions. Are there any questions or comments or things you want to discuss today when it comes to creating a mindset?
I had a question, Ben.
Yeah.
This might be hard to phrase, but like, what's your workaround when you have somebody who has maybe like either an inability to tie the positives to their values, or they have maybe like, how do I say it? Like they're making justifications about why something is tied to what they think they value. Does that make sense? Like somebody could say, for example, well, I work so much because of my family, but it's not actually the case because you could prove it. You're like, your family stopped being supported $40,000 ago. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, man. Delusion, right? And man, there's so much of that in the world of people trying to hide themselves from the truth because they're afraid of the truth. People who say, I'm super productive, and you look at their schedule and you're like, no. And so that's an interesting thing to explore, man. I would say, so there's a gap between what I value and what I say that I value. Right. So in your case, and with the case of the example you're using, so it's like I say that I value this, or I think that I value this, but in reality, that's not actually my values. And the way we can objectify values, what you actually value versus what you think you value, is how you spend your three currencies, right? Your three currencies are time, money, and attention. So if you simply look at your schedule and how you invest your time, that's going to tell you, hey, this is what I value. And if you how you spend your money, well, this is what I value. How I spend my attention, those are the things I value. And some people are like, oh, I want to be wealthy, and they don't spend, or they don't invest in assets, right? They instead spend their money on things that are, instant gratification.
Do you have any workarounds for people to try to tie their actions to their values and they have a hard time? Like when I think of that, I think of like, the overworked parent that needs they obviously spend their time and their money on their family. Like it's very true. But they just can't tie any of their own actions towards their health or something like that, even though it's so evidently clear that if they did, they'd live longer for their family.
The question is, do I have any like action items?
Yeah, like because that's a struggle for a lot of people, right? Like you can go talk to like 99% of mothers out there and say, hey, like you love your kids, it's no doubt. So maybe get healthy for them. Then it's like, I have no time. So like,
Right.
what's
So,
a great way to tie the blinds?
yeah. So it's almost like the martyrdom. And a lot of people fall into this, right? There's a guilt around if I take some time for myself, I'm a bad mother, I'm a bad father because I should be giving that time to my family. And that's super common, right? Parents, including myself at times, will subordinate myself, my needs, and my fulfillment. And put someone else above me because it seems like it's morally right. Like, oh, this is I'm a good, it makes me a good person. When in reality, as you'll know, the thing that you'll have to explain to them, and often the way you explain is asking questions, is in reality, you're not positively contributing to your family. You're actually taking away from your family. And so it may be a series of successive questions you ask in terms of, hey, do you realize that when you're not investing in your time and your health and your well-being, that you're not showing up effectively for your family. Hopefully they say yes. Hey, do you realize that if you invest a little bit more time into your well-being, your health, your fitness, that your energy could show up more effectively, your attitude could show up more effectively, your overall demeanor toward life could show up more effectively. You still have to start like kind of drawing the bridge for them, making the connection in general, right? Man, that's Steve, amazing questions and all. You always have the best insights. And it has to be a case by case scenario. And certainly there's not always a one size fits all approach, is there?
What you just said at the end, though, is very, very true. Because even myself, like I always consistently think that, like, well, I not think, but I catch myself just being a body in a room often, and then I'm like, why am I doing this? But it's just this guilt that if I leave, then I'm not lending, like, and it's nothing, but it's just like, just place my corpse here. So it's kind of funny.
Get it? And so when your kids are old enough, then it becomes a conversation. And they're maybe getting there where it's like, hey guys, daddy's going to go do this now, right? I'm going to go do it because I'm making myself stronger. I'm making myself healthier so I can be a better daddy for you. And then you're then becoming a leader, right? And there is certainly that kind of dead zone where they're like, dad's just not here. But the truth is, unless they are experiencing some traumatic event during that time, they're not going to notice. If they're experiencing some stressful thing and they're lost and they're looking for you, that's different. But like if life is just continuing on as normal in your house, they'll never notice you're gone. So remember your childhood, you think of everyone's childhood, you always remember the traumatic things that happened, the things that are like super stressful, they stand out in your mind because your mind creates an imprint of those. So as long as there's nothing in the house going on that makes them feel like they're worried, alone, or lost, you're good. I forget the guy's name, Bruce Lipton, just put out a video. Bruce Lipton is the guy who wrote The Biology of Belief, really, really good book, actually. And just like how substantiated it is now, that the first 7 years of your life are everything in your development. So, like, as a dad, just I mean, do you do it naturally, but just leaning in on unconditional love. I had a conversation with one of my good friends today who we talked about like what I think my role is as a parent. And I think my only role for any of you who are parents here, you can disagree with this, but I think really my not only role, but maybe my primary role is to allow my children, I'll say this and then I'll reword it, but to allow my children to authentically be themselves. And what that really boils down to is preventing the trauma that typically creates a story in your brain. So, as an example, you're young, something happens, kids don't have the ability to separate it, they just internalize it. I'm a bad person, I did something wrong. And I'm noticing this in my son right now. My son's 12. So some stuff has happened over the last few years where he starts to internalize something about himself, which has nothing to do with him, but he makes it about him. But he doesn't have the conscious ability. Like I'll ask him, like, "Hey, buddy, why is that there?" He goes, "I don't know. I'm nothing." Like he's like, "I'm good." So he doesn't have the conscious ability to even acknowledge that it's happening. So it's almost become part of his identity now that there's like, I'm a bad person. I did something wrong, and you're like, "Whoa, whoa." Like, where did that come from? And he has no ability to know it's there. It's just part of him. So I could see now how he'll be 25 years old and he'll be like, oh, this is just who I am. When in reality, it's not at all who you are. It's just what happened to you. But as a child, you don't have the ability to differentiate between an event and who you are, right? So as an adult, you can say, I can differentiate between things that I do and the person that I am. Right, or an event that happened to me and the person that I am, I can separate those things because I have a prefrontal cortex, a fully developed prefrontal cortex. Child doesn't have that. They take it on, it's just part of my identity now. So it's really, really interesting to help to think about navigating, ultimately protecting your children from taking on an identity that isn't theirs as a protective mechanism. They're trying to protect themselves. Right, because like if something happens where mom denies me or mom or dad doesn't like me, or I take on this story of like I'm a bad person, so that because I don't want to blame them because they're my protector, they're my provider. I can't blame the most important people in my life. It must be my fault. I'm going to keep it inside and internalize this so they can continue to love me. And it's interesting, man. Human psychology is so fucking interesting to me. So interesting. Yep, between 0 and 7, Ross, you nailed it, man. Any other questions, gents? Things you guys want to chat about?
Ben, can I chime in on the thing Steve was talking about? Are you familiar with human need psychology, popularized by Tony Robbins? Talk about the six human needs. I think a lot of times men especially are getting those needs fulfilled at work or wherever else. So it's not through health and fitness. So if you're getting certainty, variety, significance, growth, four out of the six met through being a workaholic, then health and fitness is not where you're focused at all. So I think a big part of it is shifting people's avenue through which they get those needs met. If we can show guys how to get the need of love and connection or certainty or variety or significance through health and fitness, it can help to shift that pathway and that perspective.
I agree with you completely, man. So one thing I'll add to that is at some point in everyone's life, you're going to come into a crossroads, a stressful situation that you don't know how to handle. You don't have the skill or the ability yet to cope or to navigate some stressful situation, right? And I'm not talking about a physical encounter. I'm talking about something in your head. You're like, I don't know what to do with this. And oftentimes when we're young, we develop these coping strategies, right? So even in business, you're like this overwhelming thing going on, is there, a bad relationship or bad business deal, or I'm losing a bunch of money, or I lost a very close friend, and we don't have the ability to deal with it. And so we just take on this burden of stress and we ruminate in it and it gets in our head. And then we're taught external coping strategies, right? We're taught alcohol, we're taught food, we're taught social media, we're taught television, we're taught whatever, candy, sugar, porn, whatever you choose your hedonistic pursuit. And that becomes habituated because that then you learn like every time this happens, I do it again. Every time this happens, I do it again. Every time I fight with my wife, instead of having a conversation, I'm gonna go find some way to mute it. Every time I'm having a bad day, instead of finding some way to make it better, I mute it, right? So we want to numb ourselves. We want to numb our emotions and our feelings so we don't have to be in it. Anyone been there before? Yeah. So here's the catch. In those moments, you have positive coping strategies available to you, right? So what's a positive coping strategy? Kind of what Russ just said. If you can train yourself in those moments of despair, those moments of rumination to get out of your head, get into your body. There's not a single person in this community who can go on a cold plunge and get out and still have the ruminating brain. It's possible. There's not a single person in this community who can go into the gym and have a really hard workout and still be ruminating. You could have a shitty workout and still be ruminating, but if you actually get after it and train hard, it's impossible for you to keep in the ruminating brain. One, you get endorphins released. Two, you're getting a dopamine hit, both of which make you feel better. But the level of presence and attention required disables your ability or prevents your ability to stay in your brain. You can't be in your head when you're doing something really hard. And so learning how to use your body as the way through stress, psychological stress. And most people don't do that because it's hard, right? It's the habit of, oh, if I just take this pill or drink this potion or whatever, watch this pornography, I can feel better right now. Versus like, get off your ass, go for a 30-minute walk, go jump in a cold plunge, you're going to feel better. And not only is it better right now, but it's also better in the future. So now you're creating a positive habit that reinforces more resilience in your system. So stress, the ability to tolerate stress, is not a fixed thing. So right now, if you feel like you're overwhelmed with stress, that's not a fixed tolerance. Your tolerance isn't fixed. You can absolutely increase your tolerance to stress, meaning I can take on the world and not feel stressed if my body is healthy and resilient. If my body is less healthy and resilient over time, then my ability to take on stress diminishes. So it's a super important thing that we build in. It's actually a big part of your training that you're doing now with your coach, kind of built into the background. We're actually building resilience, what we call adaptive capacity, into the process. Because the more adaptive you are, the greater your adaptive capacity, the more stress we can put on your body in training, and the faster you'll adapt. So when you guys start with us in phase one, one of our primary focuses is we need to create your body, a body that's really resilient to stress or has a high adaptive capacity.
Yeah, that kind of relates quite a bit to kind of my journey so far, Ben. I was kind of probably pretty suppressed when I was younger, and never really like spoke out a lot, never really communicated very well. And obviously, my career as a poker player, when you go through all these like kind of emotional swings, sorry, and like you lose a bunch of money and then you win a bunch of money or whatever, like you're constantly being pushed and pulled, and you get through these. Just a wide array of emotions, and you just don't really know how to talk to anyone. So you kind of just like kind of filter it in, and then you kind of release it through like alcohol was quite a big one for me. I'd go out drinking at the weekends, and kind of like now my relationship with alcohol is obviously a lot better, but like you wouldn't really like, you still couldn't talk. It was just really like self-destructive. And this is kind of like what me and Andrew are working on now, that he's put me on a couple of really good books, and now I'm like a lot more aware of like my emotions and kind of like how to handle them when they arise now. So I'm kind of learning pretty fast on these things now, and obviously Man. The last couple of years as well, having a kid has made a huge difference as well, because I obviously have to take care of him.
It sounds like doing the John DeMartini breakthrough would be a really good thing for you. So every time, let's say you make 250K. At a poker table, there's huge amounts of positive to that. So you have this big positive emotion. So you create this, fantasy around like, oh, this is amazing, and this is how my life's going to always be. And then the next time you go back, you lose it and you get the exact opposite. And so learning to create, when you make the 250, how can you immediately say, acknowledge the negative? So you don't allow yourself to have the emotional ups and downs. You just go, man, I made 250. And, maybe it's someday I'll lose it, or I made the 250. And the negative to that is maybe I'm less motivated to play poker again, or maybe I made a mistake and I'm going to reinforce that negative behavior anyways. So anyways, I'm not an expert at the DeMartini method, but I would say to like consider taking the course, especially with someone who has the big emotional swings like that. Because in that moment, you can start to see, oh yeah, I see the negative to every positive. I see the positive to every negative, and I balance it out. His explanation is when you balance them in the moment of balance, there's this beautiful harmony. That's the harmony of the universe that ultimately resonates at the level of love. Cause like love is this non-judgmental, harmonious place. And judgmental, obviously, is your perception of good or bad. And if we can eliminate that, it becomes this peaceful place of harmony and love.
Yeah, because it's like really easy to be reactive at the poker table when you like lose a pot or lose a big pot. It's like you can just like really get reactive. And even just like the last couple of weeks, just the books that Andrew's recommended, it's like I'm kind of way more aware of the situation that's arising. I'm like stopping myself from that happening. And it's been a really big breakthrough. Just even like I've played poker for 15, 16 years or whatever, but just still learning about the game just through emotions as opposed to actual strategy is pretty huge.
Man, if only everyone could take, and myself included, if only everyone could take on the mindset of your life is you're not always in control. Let's say that, right? It's this idea of like we always try to grasp onto the things we think we can change and think we can control. But most people who think deeply about this will tell you like, man, you're not in control, right? You don't have the ability, like it's going to happen the way it's going to happen. And like you can influence the outcomes, but you're certainly not the one creating the outcomes. And so when something good happens, you're like, man, great. When something bad happens, you're like, man, great. Like it's just like it's just a happening. We are the observer. We don't have to be the person who is experiencing it and getting sucked into the emotional experience. We can simply observe it and go, oh, Ben is experiencing a challenging day today. Like, because I'm my body, right? I'm not necessarily my mind and my soul. And so that's a very, call it evolved way of looking at it. Anyone else have things you want to add? I love talking about mindset. I don't always like, I could talk about this for 2 hours, but I don't want to just keep like spouting the monologue at you guys. So you guys can choose a direction. I'll say the greatest thing that helps my mindset is surrounding myself with people who are willing and able to push. I just fucking love being around guys who are working hard. That to me is the best thing. One of my favorite things about this community, right, is we get in the same place and you get around what I call a worthy adversary. And it doesn't have to be someone who you're necessarily adversarial with, but someone who's willing to push you. And I think that's when men really start to thrive, really start to identify and explore who we are and what we're made of. I love that. Like when I meet a man who like can really challenge me physically, I love it, man. Like I love the idea of taking on a challenge. I'll be willing to take a beating. I'll be willing to get my ass kicked. I just love the idea of like we're gonna go at this as warriors, as men, head to head. I fucking love it. I think that's the true mindset, and that's the essence of a growth mindset, isn't it? It's like I'm willing to lose because I'm either gonna win or I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna win or I'm gonna grow. There's no losing in challenge. The only time you lose is when you don't participate, right? Or when you quit. If you just like grab your balls and take a step into it, that's the ultimate growth mindset, I think. See your little emoji over there, Russ.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Russ, I'm sure you've got the golden nuggets to contribute to mindset stuff.
Well, I'll just say that talking about those belief systems instilled between 0 and 7, my dad left when I was 3. So my immediate belief system was something's wrong with me. If I'm good enough, why did he leave? So the not good enough, so I think curses most people at some level or another. But it was a big one for me, and it was only that type of environment that led me to believe that I could be something more than not good enough, by being challenged directly and not in a, you're not good enough, not in a come on pussy kind of way, because like there's enough of that toxicity out there, but going, no man, you got this, come on, let's go. And the saying, a rising tide lifts all boats, right? We lift each other up by being our best and challenging each other to that. I think it's incredibly instrumental in us stepping into our potential. It has been for me, and I still got a
Man.
long way to go.
It'll never end. And so I always say to my guys that I see what you're capable of way more than you see what you're capable of, because I don't have the bullshit story standing in the way, right? I look at you and I just see infinite potential. The only thing limiting you is your belief system, right? You just got to get your shut your mind down and go. Andrew said something that still repeats in my brain every once in a while. I think you said it probably 2 months ago now, Andrew. You said something to the effect of, and you can correct my misquote, but something to the effect of, athletes act first and they think second. And I was like, yep. Like, you step into it, you start working. It's the, like, the I'm gonna step, like, the best athletes are reflexive. Their reflection is to step into challenge, work, whatever needs to get done, and figure it out on the way. I'm like, that resonates with me for sure.
Yeah, I end up telling people a lot, put the behavior before the thought.
Yeah. Man, how many of us have stopped ourselves from doing the thing we want to do just because we talked ourselves out of it? I'm a little bit tired today, right? Like, you gotta just go, right? Put your shoes on, go, right? Because it doesn't have to be perfect. You just gotta start. Consistency is just massive, man. Just like, you could suck, but you're not gonna suck if you do it every day for a year, right? You're not gonna suck if you do it every day for 2 years or 5 years. It's impossible to suck. So, like, you may suck today, but you're not gonna suck if you're just consistent on it for 12 months. That's the way I would frame it. It would be unreasonable for you to suck forever if you did it every day. Doesn't even matter if you're terrible at it when you start, right? Doesn't matter. Yeah, man. And I hope that we can all be in the same place at one time or another and experience the energy of men who want to get after it. And even when you don't, you still do, right? Even when you don't, you're like, man, everyone else is going, let's go. And you just get lifted, right? It's the best. I didn't realize when I was competing how much I loved working out with other people who, because I was always the guy who was leading, right? I was carrying everybody else. But now, since retiring, I love training with guys who like to push, who like to train. Josh, what do you got to say? I see you smiling over there, man. What you got?
I was just thinking about how what you were saying that you can't suck forever. You know, if you keep going and going and going, it's kind of the it's the definition of insanity, right? If you can't go over and over expecting a different result. But in some respects, I've got I have a very athletic 10-year-old who is a lot of fun, and part of the reason for my journey was to keep up with him. My muscle intelligence journey is to keep up with him. And
Mine too.
yesterday after work, I get home and I was looking forward to this small honey-do list that I had. I've got to replace some outlets in the house, you know, just shut some breakers down. I was going to ask him if he wanted to help me do that, all this kind of stuff. I get home, first thing out of his mouth is, he's like, "Daddy, you want to play baseball?" Yep. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And I've got, he said, I'm gonna throw it pretty hard. It's okay, bring it. And then I've got lace marks on my front of my right shin bone where I missed it, and it smoked me.
Nice.
But it's the best bruise ever been. It's so good. It's so good. I did, while I've got the floor here, I wanted, if you wouldn't mind, one of the first things you talked about, assessing our functional capacity. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that, about how we like a self-assessment to doing that, and
It's
to
really
be
simple.
specific, more like prioritizing?
Yeah, it's really simple. So it's the ability to take on tasks and complete them. It's the size and frequency with which you complete tasks. So if you find yourself taking on big tasks and following through and finishing them, you have a very big functional capacity. you find yourself struggling with little stuff, you have a very low functional capacity. This is something we can build up. We can work on it. As an example, start by making your bed. Why? It doesn't matter. Your bed is bullshit. What matters is you're proving to yourself that you can follow through on the smallest functional thing. Do you brush your teeth every day? Yeah, great. We got another one. Do we create our schedule every day? Great, we got another one. So start with small things that prove to yourself that you're the type of man who follows through on the small things, so that you can prove to yourself that you're capable of doing the big things. We do the same thing in our health journey, right? So as coaches, we're building out your top five high impact habits every day or every week. And they can start really, really small for some people. Like my dad, as an example, my dad, I need you to eat 50 grams of protein 3 times a day. Can you do that? Like, that's the level of his capacity. Even that sometimes he struggles with, right? And then from there, I'm like, all right, Dad, I need you to drink 4 liters of water every day, 1 gallon with some lemon in it. Can you do that? Yes. Right. For you guys, like, fuck, that's easy. I can do that. But for my dad, he can't, you know? So we're starting with these really small commitments that he's just falling through on every day. But guess what happens? Just like anything else, it would be unreasonable for you to do it every day and still suck after 6 months. So that's what we're relying on, is like, hey, you do these small things, eventually you get to the big ones. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I appreciate that. I think
Yeah.
it's I mean, it's exposing, honestly, that I think sometimes I'm overconfident in my functional capacity and load the wagon when the mule's still at the trough eating, you know. It's not quite ready to pull it. So I appreciate that.
So, man, here's my, I do the same thing. Here's my strategy. So I had a coach who called me on this, and it really punched me in the mouth. Every Sunday I sit down and I write down my to-do list, like literally everything I have to do that week. And obviously you can't prioritize everything. So you have like these time blocks throughout the day where you're like, hey, here's where I'm going to work. Here's where I'm going to train. Here's where I'm going to spend time with my family. So you're like, hey, realistically, I only have this many time blocks to do my deep work. So let's say I get 4 to 6 hours a day to do deep work. I have to consciously choose from that list the most important priorities that are going to go into that space. So every day, you may have 50 things, or maybe sometimes 100 things on your to-do list, right? This is your own to-do list you created. This can be everything on there. So it could be everything from work tasks to doing my dry cleaning to going to the grocery to changing the light switches, whatever. You decide what goes into what we call the big rocks, go into those places where you're going to do your deep work. That way, it's always a conscious decision of like, hey, I'm consciously choosing to put this above this because I know I got to get it done. And rather than just reactively, so some people want to just like pick the easy shit from the list because it makes them feel like they're getting something done. That's not always the most effective strategy, right? So we pick the things that are most important, maybe t most time sensitive, and we put those into the time blocks of like, hey, I know during this time block, I'm able to do work. And so that's been the most effective strategy for me. I'm not perfect with it, but it definitely allows me to objectively choose. Listen, I've got 77 things to get done in the next however many days. I have to consciously choose where my time goes.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm an engineer, a civil engineer. So you start talking about schedules and blocks and stuff, my engineered brain, it resonates. So I appreciate
Totally.
that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So you guys may have noticed, for everyone that's in the Telegram group, this week I dropped in a list of stress interventions, things we can do instead of the negative coping strategies. If you didn't, go check it out. I'm also going to mention that as of May 1st today, we're supposed to be moving off of Telegram onto WhatsApp. And the reason I'm choosing to do that, and if anyone has pushback, you can share your thoughts. The reason I'm consciously choosing to do that is because WhatsApp affords us an opportunity to segment the conversations a little bit more effectively. Unfortunately, Telegram isn't allowing us to do that. Meaning, if we want to have a conversation, like a chat thread on muscle building, if we want to have a chat thread on longevity, if we want to have a chat thread on fat loss, if we want a chat thread on peptides, we can segment those with different chats on WhatsApp. That's a really useful tool to improve our engagement and give you guys just the information you want instead of a huge amount of just like random. You know, sometimes you log into Telegram, there's 97 messages you've been missing. You're like, I'm not reading these. Whereas if you have the different subcategories, you can choose, you can pick and choose your battles. So we're going to be moving over this week. Is anyone opposed to that? Or anyone not have WhatsApp?
I don't like that it's owned by Meta, but we're not talking about government secrets, so it's okay.
Yeah, man, either do I, Russ. I hate it. That's why I chose Telegram. And the other thing, which is a thought, is everyone's phone numbers are on there. I don't think anyone cares. We're all respectful guys, but like Telegram, the reason I started with it is it's anonymous. There's no phone numbers. Man, it's such a pain in the ass that we can't do segmented chats. Like if they just added the feature of like, hey, we can segment the chats, it would be so much more effective. I think it's worth it. I think the community engagement will be better. I'm part of a couple other communities that use that feature, and it's just so useful. So hopefully it works out to our benefit. Russ, you know as well as anybody, man, that like the ubiquitous technical surveillance, you're not getting under the radar, man.
Yeah,
No matter.
they got all your info anyway.
Dude, they got your fucking pictures of your retina. Like they know where you're walking. It's crazy, man. Yeah.
Yeah, just with going to WhatsApp and all the phone numbers being exposed, we just have to make sure that Coach Steve doesn't booty call anybody at 4 a.m.
Man, you
There are no
don't know
promises.
about that.
It's Andrew I'm worried about, not Steve.
Right.
Just expect a voice note.
It's not a pick. Any other questions, comments, thoughts, anything else you guys want to chat about tonight?
This isn't related. I was just wondering, question from a client, Ben. I don't know anything about peptides. I know that BPC 157 is more about recovery and like old tissue or possibly like, atrophied tissue. Any other peptides that might be worth taking for people over the hump of 40 that just are trying to prioritize muscle growth?
Yeah, so there's three that I think everyone should take. Like, that's obviously a very, I like to make big broad scope general statements, but it seems as though that they all have very, very high safety profiles and very, very high utility profiles, meaning being useful. BPC being one, TB4 being another, thymus and beta 4, and then GHK, CU, GHK, and copper. Those three, I would say. I've looked at the meta-analysis and all of them, and they're just remarkable, man. Like, can't beat those. You could also make an argument for thymusin alpha 1, not as often though. Thymusin alpha 1 is really useful for your thymus gland, which is your immune system. And the other one I would say, if you're going to explore peptides, is Epitalon, which is a reset for your pineal gland. So, anytime, I've written longevity protocols, and the two peptides that we always start with for everybody for longevity is Epitalon and thymusin alpha 1. Those are the two longevity peptides we always start with because those are your main kind of glandular resets for your pineal and your thymus. Most people have never heard of your pineal and your thymus. Pineal is what's going to influence your circadian rhythm the most, your sleep-wake cycles, which is digestion, health, functional cells. The thymus is going to regulate your immune system. Your immune system is just so important to long-term health. So those are from longevity perspective, and the other three I mentioned would be more from a tissue health perspective, but also from longevity perspective.
And you said TB4. I'm familiar with TB500 in combination with BPC 157, but what's the TB4?
TB4 is a more effective version of TB500. So TB500 is a synthetic version, which has a slightly different amino acid sequence, but it's just based the way I understand it. It's like TB500 is a slightly more diluted version of TB4. If you can find real TB4, it's more effective, but with TB500, it's the same principle, just like slightly different.
Copy.
What's the difference between taking the pill, the shot, or the spray?
Yeah, good question, Lewis. So the oral, and I'm guessing you're referring to BPC 157. The oral BPC typically doesn't pass through the gut wall, but it has huge benefits to digestive health. So if you want to heal your gut, BPC 157 oral is a good idea. If you want to heal your tissues, you have to inject it. It's been then suggested if you want to heal your brain or your nasal cavity, then you would take it with the oral spray, excuse me, the nasal sprays. I don't know anyone that's actually used the nasal sprays. I've heard of many people doing it, but I've never actually heard of anyone getting a great result from it. The injectables are remarkable. I know you asked about should it be injected subcutaneously or locally. If you can get it locally into the area you're trying to heal, it seems to be more effective. So again, it still works if you inject it anywhere, meaning if you put it in your leg, it'll still work in your arm, but maybe not as much. Again, the difference seems to be small, but noticeable.
I also noticed that sometimes you can inject it in the fatty tissue or in the muscle. So if you, let's say you want to address a tendon, so you would go close to it, not in the tendon, obviously. But will it help the rest of the body too, or just going to go where it close to?
It'll help the rest of the body. Now, here's the thing, Lewis. You don't want to go in the fat tissue. So subcutaneous does not mean fat.
That means muscle.
Subcutaneous, no. So there's intramuscular, that's in the muscle. Subcutaneous is not in fat, it's in the skin. So you don't want to like grab fat and put it in the fat. You want to like pinch the skin and go underneath the skin. So it's a bit of a different, yeah, it's most people are like, oh, just go in the fat. It's not the fat. You don't want to go in the fat. So if you were to like find an area in your body where there isn't a lot of fat and just pinch the skin and you're kind of going between the muscle and the skin, not into fat.
So like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't go on your forearm because it'll leave a mark, but you could go on your upper arm. You could go up here. You could go on your
The
leg. Yep, you can go on your leg. You can go on your abdomen.
But the issue I'm trying to get is the bicep tendon.
Yeah,
So
just put it right. Man, I would use I'll go on like my outer arm, like if I in my brachialis here, my brachioradialis, right in there.
okay, thank you.
Any other so guys, there's lots of peptides that are useful, but those are the five that I would say are worthwhile to explore. Now, obviously, your source matters. In the US, my most highly recommended source is peptidesciences.com. I have no affiliation, but it seems to be a very reputable source. In Canada and the UK, we use CanLab. CanLab.net seems to be a really good, reliable source as well. Now, again, no affiliation. It just seems like everyone I spoke with does well with those companies.
Can you write the five peptides on the site?
On the chat.
Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure, brother. Done. Now, those are all injectables. They also make oral peptides, which they call peptide bioregulators, which don't work short term, not very beneficial short term, but they work long term on the epigenome, what's called the epigenome. So it's basically your genes being turned on or off. Those things seem to be very useful. There's 50 years of human data on peptide bioregulators, whereas as far as other longevity modalities, that blows it out of the water.
One last question. When you take peptides, is that something you're taking like twice a week, once a week, a couple times a week, you know?
Yeah, so Lewis, I wrote the protocol in the chat for you. So everyone's different. Not in this chat. I wrote it in the chat when you asked on Telegram. So every peptide is different. So the dosages is different. The like meaning the milligram per day, the frequency is different. So if you're taking BPC, you can take that daily. TB4, you only need that once a week. You could take it daily, but you only really need it once a week. GHK-CU, you probably want to take it every other day. Epitalon, the suggestion is you take it every day for either 10 to 30, up to 30 days, from 10 to 30 days. Thymus and Alpha 1, about 10 days. So they're all different. Now, remember, these protocols that I'm recommending are not my protocols. I've taken a lot of peptide courses in my day, learned some from some of the best peptide doctors. Dr. William Seeds is probably the number one guy, at least most recognizable guy in the world. Dr. Vladimir Kavinsin is the guy who actually invented peptides or discovered peptides in Russia. She recently passed away, but I've studied with one of his lab attendants. So these are not my protocols. This is how they approach them.
Ben, I want to make sure I got that right. BPC daily, TB once a week, GKC every other day, and the Epitalon was how often?
I take it either for 10 days in a row or 30 days in a row at a slightly lower dose, but only every 3 or 4 months. Like I won't take it. Maybe I'll probably take it 2 to 3 times a year. Same with the thymus and alpha 1. Thymus and alpha 1 is super useful to keep around if you ever feel like your immune system's kicking up. If you're feeling like you're getting sick, I keep a bottle of thymus and alpha 1 around just to boost the immune system. The other one that's worth putting on the here is melanotan 2. Melanotan 2 is a tanning peptide, but recent research shows it's pretty useful for longevity because it drops inflammation. It's another one you guys can throw on that list. Melanotan is, it'll make you darker in, as far as tan. It's also infamous for spontaneous erections. You feel like you're a 17-year-old boy in puberty. It's pretty interesting. Strong wind blows and you're pitching a tent,
Could be
but
awkward on bench press.
totally. But yeah, it's an interesting. So they've isolated the aspect of melanotan that causes that side effect, the spontaneous erection, and now they sell that in isolation. It's actually called PT-141, and you can just buy. So if you want some erectile support, it's called PT-141, and it's I think it lasts like 6 hours, but it's not like you're gonna, have to call the doctor for having longer than 6 hours of erections. It just helps with, making stronger erections. It's significantly more effective than Cialis. I'm not sure it still happens with the PT-141. With melanotan, you feel a little nauseous. With PT-141, I'm not sure. Are peptides directly linked to improve athletic performance, or is that a result? So these peptides, Des, I would say, are not. So the word directly has to be described. So anything that positively contributes to accelerated recovery or improved adaptive capacity indirectly contributes to performance. So it doesn't directly contribute to performance. Like caffeine would directly contribute to performance. Testosterone would directly contribute to performance. These would indirectly contribute to performance because it's improving your ability to recover and do more work. It's not direct, but it's definitely significant.
And one more question. On a syringe, it says 10, 20, 30, and I believe that every number is 20 milligrams. So how do you get 3 point? No.
No. So the concentration, Lewis, influences. So let's say you have a one, you have a 10 milligram bottle, and you're going to buy a 10 milligram bottle of BPC, right? So
Yeah.
in one bottle, you have 10 milligrams. It's not mixed. No, there's no water in there yet. It just comes as a lyophilized powder.
Right.
You put 1 milliliter of water in there. So now you've got 1 milliliter and you've got 10 milligrams mixed. So you've got now the, so now the ratio is 1 milligram per, sorry, 10 milligrams per 1 milliliter. So the whole milliliter is 10 milligrams. So now you have a concentration. So now if I want to get 1 milligram injections, I have to do 1/10 of that, right? So if I'm getting 10 milligrams in total, in 1 milliliter of water. I just need 1/10 of that milliliter. Does that make sense?
How do you measure it on the syringe, though? The syringes are 10, 20, 30, 40.
Well, so typically 10 is 1/10 of a milliliter,
Okay.
20 is 1/20 of a milliliter, 30 is, well, not 1/20, sorry, one fifth. 30 is like 1/3, right? So like those syringes are generally 100 units. 100 units is the same as 1 milliliter. In 1 milliliter, there's 100 units. So you're
Wow.
basically, yeah. Does that make sense?
So it is three syringe fulls?
No.
No, I
What's
lost.
three syringe fulls?
The syringe has 10 numbers on it, right? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60.
Up
Okay.
to 100.
And 200.
Yeah. So that amount up to 100 is the exact same as 1 milliliter. It's just spread out. So when I mix 1 milliliter of water into this into the vial, now I pull out 1/10 of it.
So if I want 3.3 milligrams.
Oh yeah, so you would want 1/3 of it. You would want 33 on the insulin syringe.
Okay, so 33 on the syringe.
Yep.
Great. Okay, I understand now. And then when you go down to the 1 milligram, you go to the 10 number.
Boom. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Pleasure, man. Yeah, I know. When I started, I was like, I don't get it. Yeah, but it's relatively simple. It's just basic math.
Okay. Thank
Hey Ben, I have a question. Your distinction that subcutaneous is not in the fat, that's a new one for me, and perhaps a mistake I was making before. Is that true with things like growth hormone as well? So you would not go in the fat. Wow. Okay.
No, because it'll get stuck in the fat cells. You want to go, so subcutaneous is between the skin and the muscle, not in fat. I'll always look for a part of my body that actually doesn't have any fat. Like I try to avoid going into fat as much as possible.
Yeah, with things like, and I'm not using it right now, but I'd had that brief period where I was using the Zamactin as a growth hormone, and I thought the goal was to inject it directly into the fat. So
To
probably lost,
like melt the fat. No, it doesn't work.
yeah, probably lost half of the effectiveness by doing it that way.
Maybe some percentage. The same thing with, it's interesting, the same thing with doing subcutaneous injections of testosterone. It's apparently not as effective as doing it intramuscular. It's still effective, it's not as effective. So it's you're probably just losing some small percentage of effectiveness. Yeah. Hello, little man. God, he looks like your wife, bro.
That's what I said. Isn't it
Yeah.
crazy? It's like her face is just face swap. Give me one soon, man.
He's getting big.
Oh,
He's gigantic.
Ben, quick question.
Hey,
If
man.
one has to make a choice between for your peptides, is intramuscular, it sounded like okay if you're trying to do some site-specific injections, right, for healing.
Yep.
So IM is okay, or is sub-Q
I
better?
prefer intramuscular whenever possible. The only time I would go away from intramuscular is if you're doing a lot of injections, because then you'll drive up your creatine levels. So I would just, if you're doing a ton of injections, like more than one a day, then I would go start going subcutaneous. But if you're just doing it occasionally, then intramuscular seems to be more effective.
Much like Russell, I'm kind of blown away by that distinction. Thank you for that.
Yeah, dude. I've got a little bit of experience in this department. Just a little bit. Yeah, the benefits of being a meatbag for 20 years. Gents, we're over time. So if you guys have any questions, I'm happy to stick around. But if you guys want to bounce, you get back to your amazing lives. I really appreciate you guys. I respect you. I honor your mission. I just want to say that Man, no matter where you are in your journey, no matter where you are in your day, and I honor you, I respect you, because we're all struggling. We all have great days and challenging days, and just keep going. Just keep going, guys. One step at a time, one foot in front of the other, and there's always more in the tank, man. And I would just say, like, be so grateful to yourself. Be so grateful to your community. Be so grateful to your ability and your desire to continue going, and realize, like, there's always more in the tank. Like, push hard this week. Thanks for being here, guys.